I don't know. It's a math charge. Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of I Don't Know with Samantha George. This is the weekly podcast where we talk about life, conspiracy theories, the paranormal, have conversations with guests, and occasionally have some deep conversations. How is everyone doing? I am doing well. It's honestly been a weird couple of days though. I don't know if it's just me, but I mean, see, during 2020 and 2021 to an extent, it feels like, you know, every day has gone by really quickly. But I don't know, for the past couple of days, I feel like there's no separation between the days. Like it starts and gets over and starts and gets over. I mean, that's how time works too. But I feel like everything is just clumped up together. I don't know if it's just me or other people feel like that too for the past couple of days. But yeah, maybe the universe is trying to tell us something. Or maybe I just need more than 8 hours of sleep. But well, that being said, this week I'm trying something new. This is a relatively new segment in the podcast, I can say. I am doing something that is kind of a series. This is something that I have been following up for the past few weeks, and I'm honestly deeply invested in it. It's a heartbreaking situation, and I'm kind of disappointed that, you know, when the situations got as bad as it did, I got more invested in it. Typical behavior, but well, it's better late than never, right? So yeah, I'm trying to educate myself about the situation, and the series, essentially what the series is going to cover, is Afghanistan, the heart of Asia. So without any further ado, let's just get right into today's episode. Afghanistan. Located in the heart of South Central Asia, known to be the body that connected the important trade routes of Southern and Eastern Asia to Europe and the Middle East. This country has long been a prize sought out by empire builders, and for a millennia, great armies have attempted to subdue it, including Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, to one of the most notable conquerors, Muhammad of Ghazni. The country was given the nickname the Heart of Asia as it laid in the crossroads of the continent, and it's dominated by the Hindu Kush Range, which is the western extension of the Himalayas. The country has numerous rivers and reservoirs, and in the south and west of the Hindu Kush flow a number of streams. It also receives heavy snow during winter in the Hindu Kush and Pamir Mountains, and the melting snow in the spring season enters the rivers, lakes, and streams. This would be honestly quite a beautiful picture to be painted right from your hotel room, maybe even in Kabul. But as mentioned before, for more than a millennia, this country, which is rich in rare metals, has been faced with harsh conquest. So far that it dates back to 550 BC. The Iranian Achaemenid dynasty controlled the region from 550 BC until 331 BC. However, Alexander the Great defeated the emperor Darius III and subdued local resistance in the territory that is now Afghanistan. And Alexander's reign was continued by his successor until the Mauryan Empire of India gained control of the southern part of Afghanistan, bringing with it Buddhism. But in the mid-3rd century BC, the nomadic Kushan established an empire that became a cultural and commercial center. From then on end until the 7th century, the region was fragmented and under the general protection of the Iranian Sasanian Empire. This was done until the Battle of Qadisiyya in 637, which marked a 100-year process of conquering Afghanistan by the Arab Abbasid dynasty and later by Mongol conquest. I'm sorry again if I'm butchering the names, I'm trying my best here. So now in 1504 marked a new era with the Pashtun rule. The Mughals of northern India ruled for the next two centuries, conquered Afghan territory with Iranian Safavid dynasty. With the death of the great Safazi leader Nadir Shah in 1747, indigenous Pashtuns, who became known as Durrani, began a period of least nominal rule in Afghanistan, and it lasted until 1978, which is honestly quite a lot of time. Now, the first Durrani ruler was known as Ahmad Shah. He is known as the founder of the Afghan nation and united the Pashtun tribes, and by 1760 built an empire that extended to Delhi and the Arabian Sea. So it was a pretty vast empire. And then came the Great Game. Dost Muhammad, the leader of the Pashtun Muhammad Dazai tribe, ruled at the beginning of the Great Game. This thus began a century-long contest for domination of the Central Asia and Afghanistan between Russia, which was keen on expanding to the South region, and Britain, which was intent on protecting India. Now, there were wars that were fought between the Afghan and British Empire. The first Anglo-Afghan war that happened between 1839 and 42, the British deposed Dost Muhammad and abandoned their Afghan garrisons in 1842. The following decades, the Russian forces approached the northern border of Afghanistan, and then in 1878, the British invaded and held most of Afghanistan. This happened when the British invaded Afghanistan again, happened to be known as the Second Anglo-Afghan War. And then the Treaty of Rawalpindi was signed in 1990, which ended the Third Anglo-Afghan War and marked Afghanistan's official date of independence. And in 1923, Amanullah introduced the country's first constitution, but his reign was short-lived. As in 6 years later, his abdication happened. After his abdication, his nephew Muhammad Zahir Shah became the last king of Afghanistan with a 40-year reign. During World War II, Afghanistan remained neutral. This neutral stand of Afghanistan made things tense between its neighbor, Pakistan, and hence the country Afghanistan shifted its foreign policy towards the Soviet Union. A new constitution was ratified in 1964. This somewhat liberalized the constitutional monarchy. But in the following decade, economic and political conditions worsened. This resulted in 1973, Muhammad Daud overthrew the king and established a republic. This, however, did not improve the economic situation, and Daud lost most of his political support. Communist factions overthrew him in 1978. And in 1979, the threat of tribal insurgency against the communist government triggered an invasion by 80,000 Soviet troops, who then endured a very effective decade-long guerrilla war. Between 1979 and 1989, two Soviet-sponsored regimes failed to defeat the loose federation of Mujahideen guerrillas, who, might I add, were sponsored by the US, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia, that opposed the Soviet Union occupation of Afghanistan. And then in 1988, the Soviet Union agreed to create a neutral Afghan state. And then the last Soviet troops left Afghanistan in 1989. The agreement ended a war that killed more than thousands, devastated industry and agriculture, and created 5 to 6 million refugees. Now, the removal of the Soviet Union did not settle the differences between the government and the Mujahideen. And in 1992, Afghanistan descended into a civil war. And among the leaders of the warring factions were Ahmad Shah Massoud, a Pashtun, and Abdul Rashid Dostum, an Uzbek. There were many temporary alliances, but struggles among the armed groups continued until one Islamic fundamentalist group, the Taliban, had gained control of most of Afghanistan in 1996. Now, the Taliban had used an extremist interpretation of Islam to assert repressive control on the society of Afghanistan. The economy remained in ruins and most government services ceased to exist. Now, during the Taliban reign in Afghanistan, a lot of things happened. They also granted the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda the right to use Afghanistan as their base. Now, Al-Qaeda committed a series of terrorist attacks that finally culminated on attacks in the United States on September 11, 2001. The attack put pressure on Taliban, and most of the international bodies told them, hey, you need to release Al-Qaeda now, especially the leader of Al-Qaeda, that was Osama bin Laden. The Taliban rejected international pressure and stood firm with Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda. Their refusal resulted in the United States and allies attacking Afghanistan, and which happened in the fall of 2001. The Taliban government collapsed, but the Taliban and Al-Qaeda leaders managed to escape Afghanistan. A United States-led International Security Assistance Force began an occupation in the country. Now, in December 2001, the Afghan leaders in exile signed the Bonn Agreement, forming an interim government, the Afghan Interim Administration, under the leadership of Pashtun moderator Hamid Karzai, who in 2002, Karzai was elected president of the Transitional Islamic State of Afghanistan. A new constitution was written down, and in October of 2004, an overwhelming popular vote elected Karzai president of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. However, regional warlords and large areas of Afghanistan remained beyond the control of the Karzai government, and the government was unable to address numerous social and economic problems. The parliamentary elections of September 2005 gave regional warlords substantial power in both houses of the National Assembly. This further jeopardized Karzai's ability to unite the country, and then the Bonn Agreement lapsed after the 2005 election. And that is when its successor, the Afghanistan Compact, went into effect in January 2006. While Afghanistan was going through various political changes, the resurgent Taliban intensified terrorist attacks in areas beyond government control. This made the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO forces, turn back a Taliban offensive aimed at Kandahar. But now the Taliban began to strategize, and in the beginning of 2007, the Taliban utilized safe havens in adjacent Pakistan to gradually restore and expand its control in Afghanistan. In early 2008, it controlled an estimated 10% of the country, while the government controlled only an estimated 30%. Local tribes controlled the remaining areas. Despite US-aided efforts to reduce cultivation of poppies for narcotics production in 2007 and 2008, that crop accounted for an increasing percentage of Afghanistan's economy and was a major support of the Taliban. This, along with widespread economic hardship, weakened the Karzai government's support, and it lost the popularity among the public. By 2009, the insurgent attacks increased, and international forces now focused on protecting the population and securing areas for reconstruction projects instead, rather than simply killing large numbers of insurgent groups. And this resulted in a temporary increase in the number of US troops in Afghanistan by 30,000. The increase in troops delivered mixed results. Although NATO troops were able to sweep the Taliban out of areas it controlled, they continued to launch devastating, surprising attacks against military, government, and civilian targets. There were two main factors that allowed the Taliban to remain resilient in spite of NATO's territorial gains. Number one, the widespread unpopularity of the Afghan central government and the NATO among the Afghans itself. And number two, the presence of safe havens for the Taliban fighters across the eastern border in Pakistan. Now, because it seemed the military resolution to the conflict seemed increasingly unlikely as the days went by and the public support for war declined in both Europe and US, NATO members agreed to withdraw combat troops by 2014. The US and NATO leaders were more than willing to explore prospects for negotiation, between the Taliban also. However, diplomatic contact between the US and the Taliban in 2011 and 2012 failed to make any progress towards a peaceful agreement. Now they decided a gradual transfer of security responsibilities to Afghan forces. And this began in 2011 and was accompanied by significant reduction in the number of NATO troops. In 2014, Afghanistan held a presidential election to pick a successor to Karzai, who was constitutionally barred from seeking another term in the office. This announcement was met by a number of upsurge of insurgent violence. But the first round of voting was still held, and it was scheduled in April. There was a runoff between two leading candidates. First one was Abdullah Abdullah and Ashraf Ghani. And Ashraf Ghani was ultimately elected the president. Now when Ghani assumed power, the NATO combat mission ended and only US troops remained. At the same time, a resurgent Taliban continued to strike Afghanistan. However, there was some hope. In an effort to stabilize the government, peace negotiations with the Taliban and other militant groups were held, which led to Hizb-i-Islami, the largest militant group after the Taliban, accepting the country's constitution and renouncing violence in a peace deal with the central government. This gave hope to a lot of people and made it even seem that maybe they could come to some sort of negotiation between the Taliban. And then 2018, parliamentary elections approached. The Taliban again called upon Afghans to boycott the elections and threatened violence at the polls. This was again expected. And 2 days before the election, the Taliban killed the police chief of Kandahar. But other than Kandahar, the rest of the country held their elections on time. Now, while the elections were happening, the international bodies were pushing for peace talks. Peace talks were held between United States, Saudi Arabia and Pakistan that met up with the Taliban representatives in Abu Dhabi to discuss how to advance the peace process. These talks ultimately resulted in the United States announcing that they had an intention to withdraw thousands of its troops from Afghanistan. This move was interpreted as USA signaling its seriousness in reaching a peace deal and ending the war that was happening in Afghanistan. However, Afghanistan's central government had not been informed of the decision before it was announced and expressed their shock at the United States' lack of coordination with the government, but noted that already most of the security operations were handled by the Afghan forces, so it was all right. They were okay with handling it because they already handled a lot of the security operations. Now let's go back to the presidential election results. They were out and Ghazi had received more than 50% of the vote and Abdullah had received less than 40%. Days after the election results were released, the United States and the Taliban announced that they had reached an agreement. The United States would withdraw its troops over 14 months on condition that the Taliban would pursue peace negotiations with the Afghan government and prevent Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, also known as the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, from operating within Afghanistan. The deal was signed on February 29th, 2020 after a week-long reduction of violence from both ends. The deal was signed with some other conditions, one of them being the Afghan government agreeing for a prisoner swap with the Taliban. By 2021, as we all know, Taliban controlled majority of Afghanistan and the US troops were leaving Afghanistan. The negotiation between the Taliban and the central government was not progressive and did not look, you know, bright at all. There was little to no progress. In what seemed like the worst case scenario, while the US was preparing to leave the country, the unimaginable happened. With unimaginable speed and by not even shooting a bullet, Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, was once again captured by the Taliban. The extremist group that previously reigned with whips, barring women from going out without a male companion, without them wearing on a burqa, excluding women from educational institutions, and their extreme interpretation of the Quran. That leaves the Afghan people with little to no freedom. However, it must be noted that with Taliban gaining power once again in Kabul and Afghanistan, they have promised reforms, that the past mistakes will not be committed and they will not rule with the iron fist this time. But truth be told, old habits do die hard. And as ironic as fate may seem, on the 15th of August, while India and South Korea celebrated their Independence Day, the heart of Asia, the beautiful city of Kabul and the people of Afghanistan were made to relive the past as the Taliban drove and captured the heart. That brings us to the end of this episode. One of the series. It's going to be short. I don't know if you can even call it a series, but oh well, I already did that. I hope this was educational. I feel, you know, it's important to talk about situations like this because, I mean, this situation right now that's happening to Afghanistan is a great reminder that the past can repeat itself. And we as humans need to hold ourselves accountable to it and ensure that the past and the present is written down truthfully. So yeah, I feel like this needed to be, you know, covered. It was quite important. And before we talk about any person, place, event or a situation, it is, you know, an utmost necessity to talk about the history of the situation or the event and dive a little deeper. And I hope that this episode did dive a little deeper and helped everyone understand, you know, the crux of Afghanistan. And also, if you would like to help the people of Afghanistan, there are a few places that I will link up in the bio. You can go donate there if you'd like to, or, you know, you can just help amplify the Afghan people's voices by putting up stories, doing your bit to help people there. And you know the rest of the drill. Rate the podcast if you like it, and if you learn something from the podcast and you think someone else can learn something from it, feel free to share it. With that being said, catch me next Friday or Saturday with another episode. See you when I see you. Bye.